I don't know about you, but when I need to get into that Curtis LeMay, sitting there watching the autopsy vibe, I look for a cigar that I can rely on. And that's why I love Thompson Cigar. They've been around since 1915, so they know a thing or two about cigars. Whether it's a quick 5-pack for the weekend or joining one of their value clubs, Thompson makes it easy to save while enjoying top-notch cigars. It's like having your own personal humidor with deals that you can't pass up. Visit www.thompsoncigar.com/JFK or use code JFK at checkout for 20% off of your order of $75 or more. Discover why Thompson has been America's humidor since 1915 and join the thousands of satisfied customers who trust Thompson for quality, value, and exceptional service. This episode is brought to you by Infinite Epigenetics, a first-of-its-kind health test that was developed in partnership with researchers at Harvard, Duke, and Yale. This test is unlike anything I've ever seen. It shows you your risk for the top 5 chronic diseases, things like diabetes and heart disease, and it gives you a personalized plan to help prevent them based on your own DNA. It kind of sounds like something out of sci-fi, but this is real and it's groundbreaking. Infinite Epigenetics is the only test of its kind that looks at your epigenetics. Here's what that means. It's not just looking at your DNA, it looks at how your genes change based on your daily habits. The test measures 105 health markers, things like vitamins, cholesterol, metabolism, and general immune system health. That's far more comprehensive than any single doctor's visit. And the best part, you don't need to go to a lab or give dozens of vials of blood. You just take the test from the comfort of your home. Go to infiniteepigenetics.com/JFK and use code JFK to save $150 per test for your entire first year. That's infiniteepigenetics.com/JFK, code JFK. Live infinitely with Infinite Epigenetics.
There are some very important witnesses who simply had... Have not been interrogated fully on this matter. Subcommittee was unable to do it in the time available, and there are important leads that were uncovered in the investigation that clearly need to be followed up.
This report documents the failures of the U.S. intelligence establishment in their investigation of President Kennedy's assassination and their cover-up to the Warren Commission.
We just heard from Senator Frank Church, who in 1975 led a committee to investigate intelligence activities. The second person was Senator Richard Schweiker, who would go on to be a vocal critic of the official JFK assassination story. While the Church Committee was organized to look into issues of abuses within the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and the IRS, there was a great deal of valuable information the committee uncovered that potentially touches on the Kennedy assassination. In this episode, we look at what the Church Committee had to say about the CIA's efforts to assassinate Cuban revolutionary leader Fidel Castro in partnership with the mafia through cutout Robert Mayhew.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I'm working.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Robert Mayhew's unique career began as a law student during World War II. In 1941, Mayhew was recruited out of Georgetown Law to work for the FBI as a counterintelligence officer in Europe. After the war, Mayhew worked for the FBI until 1947, when he opened his own private detective agency in Washington, D.C. One of Mayhew's main clients became the newly formed Central Intelligence Agency, which kept Mayhew on a monthly retainer. Mayhew said of the agency, quote, "The CIA was my first steady client, giving me cutout assignments, which were the jobs where the agency could not officially be involved." According to historian Evan Thomas, the television series Mission Impossible was based on Mayhew's detective agency. Mayhew associate and former Washington Post reporter John Garrity said that in 1954, he and Mayhew were summoned to Vice President Nixon's office. During this meeting, Nixon gave Mayhew approval to use various dirty tricks to sabotage a pending agreement between Greek shipping magnate Aristotle Onassis and the King of Saudi Arabia. These tricks included wiretapping and planting derogatory stories in newspapers. And yes, this is the same Aristotle Onassis who would go on to marry Jackie Kennedy. Mayhew had already been retained to break up the Onassis-Saudi deal by a direct competitor of Onassis, Stavros Niarchos. The CIA supported Niarchos because they feared that if the Onassis-Saudi deal went through, the United States would lose its monopoly control over Saudi Arabian oil. Nixon was so serious about not losing the oil monopoly that he reportedly told Mayhew, quote, And just remember, if it turns out we have to kill the bastard, don't do it on American soil. In 1955, Robert Mayhew was retained for the first time by reclusive billionaire Howard Hughes. Hughes hired Mayhew to look into a potential relationship between his fiancée Jean Peters and another man. Mayhew would continue to work for Hughes doing various projects until 1970, when the two men had a falling out. During all of those years, Mayhew never met Howard Hughes in person. The men exclusively corresponded with letters and phone calls. In the summer of 1960, Robert Mayhew continued to do regular work on behalf of both the CIA and Howard Hughes. It was around this time that the CIA requested that Mayhew contact Johnny Rosselli, a high-ranking mobster with the Chicago outfit. The CIA wanted Mayhew to ask Rosselli about getting the mafia's help to kill Fidel Castro. Just a year earlier, Castro's revolution toppled the government of Fulgencio Batista, an ally of the United States. The CIA and the Eisenhower-Nixon administration were increasingly concerned about Castro's leftist politics. At the same time, the mafia, which had been able to operate freely under Batista, found themselves kicked out of Cuba by the Castro regime, costing the mob and Santo Traficante specifically a lot of money. On top of that, after Castro took over, he kicked all of the CIA agents out of Cuba, which meant that the best contacts left on the island were mafia adjacent. Bringing in Bob Mayhew to contact organized crime was one of many plots by the CIA to assassinate Castro that were documented by the final report of the Church Committee. At first, the CIA just tried to make Castro look bad so that he would be perceived as an ineffective leader. For example, They infused a box of cigars with a chemical that caused temporary disorientation, hoping that Castro would smoke one before a speech and then say crazy things. There was another plan to dust Castro's shoes with thallium salts, which would cause his beard hair to fall out, making it appear that he was too sick to lead. This tactic was tested, but never actually used. We'll cover all the other plots against Castro, including sabotage and assassination attempts, when we get to the series on the Cuban exiles. In August of 1960, Richard Bissell, the CIA's deputy director of plans, asked Colonel Sheffield Edwards, the director of the Office of Security, to find someone who could assassinate Fidel Castro. Edwards brought in the chief of operational support, James O'Connell, to help with the project. O'Connell had served as Mayhew's case officer ever since Mayhew had been working for the CIA. He and Mayhew were close friends. Mayhew told the church committee that O'Connell asked him to contact his mafia friend, Johnny Rosselli, to see if he would participate in a plan to kill Fidel Castro. Mayhew had known Rosselli since the late 1950s as the man keeping an eye on Las Vegas on behalf of the Chicago mob, which was led by Sam Giancana. O'Connell also knew Rosselli even before approaching him about the Castro plot, because O'Connell previously had dinner with Rosselli and Mayhew at Mayhew's home. That's how close these guys all were before the plan was even in motion. Mayhew told the CIA that he was going to, quote, approach Rosselli as the representative of businessmen with interest in Cuba, who saw the elimination of Castro as the first essential step to the recovery of their investments. But in reality, Mayhew gave up the cover immediately to Rosselli. He told Rosselli that the mission was backed by, quote, high government officials. He then requested that Rosselli help him recruit Cubans for the job. To accomplish the hit on Castro, Mayhew offered $150,000, which is over $1.5 million in today's money. Rosselli declined any payment. As a condition of enlisting his help, Rosselli insisted on meeting someone with the government to verify everything that Mayhew was telling him. In September of 1960, Mayhew and Rosselli met at the Plaza Hotel in New York City with James O'Connell, who Mayhew identified to Rosselli as the CIA's operational support chief. This satisfied Rosselli that the mission was legit, and Rosselli then traveled to Florida to begin recruiting Cubans for the operation. He told the Cubans that he worked for nickel mining interests on Wall Street who wanted to see Castro out of power. In October of 1960, a month after the New York Plaza Hotel meeting, Rosselli introduced Mayhew to two people he planned to bring in on the project, a man named Sam Gold and another man named Joe. CIA support chief O'Connell also attended the meeting under the name Joe Olds. This meeting was held at the luxurious Fountain Blue Hotel, which is still open today in Miami Beach. Shortly after the meeting with Sam Gold and Joe, Mayhew saw an article about the 10 most wanted criminals in America in Parade magazine. Looking at the pictures, he realized that Sam Gold was really Sam Giancana, and that Joe was Santo Trafficante. O'Connell also recognized Giancana and Trafficante from the same magazine, which he relayed to Sheffield Edwards, who took no action. According to Mayhew, the role of Sam Giancana was to find someone in Castro's entourage who could accomplish the assassination. Ultimately, Giancana was not successful in that task because the Cubans Rosselli ended up using were not the ones procured by Giancana. While Giancana did not end up providing tangible assistance to kill Castro, he was successful in extracting a favor from Mayhew that led to J. Edgar Hoover finding out about the CIA's partnership with the mafia. Giancana, Mayhew, and Rosselli stayed in Miami for several months in late 1960 in an effort to recruit Cubans for the plot. During that time, Giancana came to believe that his girlfriend, singer Phyllis McGuire, was cheating on him. He was so upset about this prospect that he threatened to drop everything he was working on for Mayhew in Miami to go to Las Vegas and see for himself if she was cheating. In an effort to keep the project on track and to keep Giancana in Miami, Mayhew agreed to hire a private investigator to shadow McGuire. The investigator who took the job attempted to put a wiretap on the hotel room phone of singer Dan Rowan, the man Giancana suspected his girlfriend was seeing. While he was installing the bug, the investigator was caught red-handed. It turns out, according to Mayhew and O'Connell, that Colonel Sheffield Edwards approved placing the bug on Rowan's phone line in order to appease Giancana. However, in addition to Mayhew wanting Giancana to stay in Miami to finalize the plan to kill Castro, there's also an argument that the CIA independently wanted to tap Rowan's phone because they wanted to see what Giancana had been telling his girlfriend about the Castro plot. We know from an October 18, 1960 memo from J. Edgar Hoover to Richard Bissell that Giancana was telling people in several conversations that Fidel Castro would soon be assassinated by a girl dropping a poison pill in his drink. So the CIA may have been concerned that Giancana was compromising operational security with his loose lips. When the FBI found out about the illegal wiretap by Mayhew's investigator, the Bureau wanted to press charges against Mayhew, Rosselli, and Giancana. But when Mayhew told the FBI about the nature of the operation, the CIA was able to convince Director Hoover to take no action due to the national security implications. This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. If you listen to Solving JFK a lot, you know that I like to keep the vibes up. And that's why I'm a fan of federally legal cannabis from Mood.com. It's a brand that uses small organic farms to source its pesticide-free legal weed. You can get 20% off of your first order at Mood.com by using code JFK. My favorite product of theirs is the functional THC gummies. Usually I go with Epic Euphoria, but I also like Magic Mind and the Pure Relief CBD gummies. These legal weed gummies take about 20 minutes to kick in, and you can control the dosage yourself. Unlike the federal government, Mood.com has never sold drugs to fund illegal wars or clandestine missions. Thanks, Mood.com. So try out some of the excellent legal cannabis products from Mood.com and get a 20% discount off of your first order using code JFK. Okay, so we know that the CIA worked with specific members of the mafia, namely Rosselli, Trafficante, and Giancana. But what do we know about the actual plot? Initially, the CIA wanted a gangland-style killing where Castro would be gunned down. But Giancana was concerned that it would be too hard to recruit Cubans to do something so dangerous. Rosselli expressed that he wanted to use an assassination method that was, quote, nice and clean, without getting into any kind of out-and-out ambushing. Everyone agreed that poison pills would be the best way to effect the assassination. In February of 1961, the poison pills, which had been tested and proven to be lethal, were given to Johnny Rosselli by support chief O'Connell. The pills were then given to a Cuban for delivery to the island in advance of the planned Bay of Pigs invasion. By early March, the poison pills had been delivered to an official close to Castro who had been bribed by the mafia. This official then lost his job with the Cuban government and his access to Castro, and was no longer able to move forward with the plot. After the first plan failed, a leading figure in the Cuban exile movement, Dr. Tony Verona, was approached to help. Incidentally, Verona was on Traficante's payroll to ensure gambling, prostitution, and drug monopolies in Cuba if Castro could be ousted. Verona said he had a contact who worked at a restaurant that was frequented by Castro. In exchange for equipment and about $10,000 in cash, Verona agreed to help kill Castro. He was given the money and a new set of poison pills when he met with Mayhew, Rosselli, and Traficante at the Fontainebleau Hotel. Like the first one, this plot was also aborted because Castro stopped visiting the restaurant where Verona's friend was working. After two failed attempts to kill Castro while working with Rosselli, Giancana, and Traficante, the operation, referred to internally by the CIA as the, quote, gambling syndicate operation, was transferred from Sheffield Edwards to Bill Harvey. Harvey is a notorious figure of legendary stature in the CIA, who many official story critics believe is at the heart of the assassination plot. His name will come up again in future episodes, and he'll get his own deep dive at some point. In early 1961, Bill Harvey was given the assignment of creating the capability within the CIA to disable foreign leaders, including assassinations. This capability was known as Executive Action and was eventually given the cryptonym ZR Rifle. In April of 1962, Harvey asked Sheffield Edwards to put him in touch with Rosselli. CIA support chief O'Connell then introduced Harvey to Rosselli in Miami. Harvey told Rosselli to maintain his Cuban contacts, but to avoid dealing with Mayhew or Giancana, who Harvey believed were untrustworthy and unnecessary. On April 21st, on the orders of Richard Helms, Bill Harvey traveled to Miami with four poison pills, which he then delivered to Rosselli. Rosselli was still in touch with Tony Verona, the Cuban he worked with on the earlier unsuccessful attempt. This time around, Verona requested guns, communications equipment, and a boat radar. Harvey and Miami JM Wave station chief Ted Shackley rented a U-Haul truck and personally delivered the arms and equipment to a parking lot and handed Rosselli the keys to give to Verona. The equipment, weapons, and poison pills arrived in Cuba in May and were supposed to be used by a three-man team to kill Castro. On May 7th, Attorney General Robert Kennedy was told for the first time about the euphemistically named gambling syndicate operation by the CIA. Prior to this briefing, RFK had no knowledge of any plots involving the CIA and the mafia working together. According to Sheffield Edwards, the Attorney General was very upset when he heard that Giancana was involved. The CIA lied to the Attorney General and told him that the operation had been terminated, but the reality was it was still ongoing. RFK's response was to order that the mafia should never be used again without the administration's knowledge and consent, which the CIA immediately violated. 4 months after the Attorney General was told the operation was over, Rosselli was still trying to work with the Cubans to kill Castro. As of September 1962, they had not been successful. Rosselli told Harvey that a second team had been sent to Cuba to use the supplies that were already on the island. It was around this time that Harvey lost his faith in the operation and told Rosselli, quote, "There was not much likelihood the operation was going anyplace or that it should be continued." In mid-February of 1963, Bill Harvey formally terminated the operation with Rosselli at a meeting in Los Angeles. He told Rosselli to taper off his communications with the Cubans. Rosselli followed Harvey's instructions. However, he never told the Cubans that the $150,000 bounty on Castro's head had been withdrawn. For their part, none of the mafia leaders who worked on the plot, not even Johnny Rosselli, were ever compensated by the government. In the end, the result of the mafia's dalliance with the Central Intelligence Agency was a handful of failed attempts and a get-out-of-jail-free card for the wiretapping of Sam Giancana's girlfriend's new beau. According to the Church Committee, the plan to work with the mafia was put into action by the CIA through official channels, essentially because it was what the CIA thought the president wanted, even though it was not explicitly ordered. On the other hand, author Don Folsom claims that Vice President Richard Nixon directed the plan for the CIA to work with the mafia because he wanted to use the mafia's contacts who were still in Cuba. Nixon had personal knowledge of these contacts because he had been to Havana himself to gamble at a casino controlled by Santo Traficante in 1952. Folsom's claim is backed up by what former JFK press secretary Pierre Salinger says that Robert Mayhew told him. Salinger said Mayhew, quote, said he had been in contact with the CIA, that the CIA had been in touch with Nixon, who had asked them to go forward with this project. It was Nixon who had Mayhew do a deal with the mafia in Florida to kill Castro. One possible reason Nixon may have wanted to work with the mafia is because they were already bribing him, according to Edward Grady Parton, a union member from Baton Rouge who became a government informant against Jimmy Hoffa. Parton said that he was at a meeting between Hoffa and Carlos Marcello, where Marcello provided a suitcase with $500,000 in cash to Hoffa, which was being delivered as a bribe to Richard Nixon. This was just the first of two equal payments, according to Parton. On the contrary, author Jim DiEugenio notes that Parton was not a particularly reliable witness, and he became an informant only to save himself. Also, there's no other corroboration for this alleged bribe of Nixon. It would make sense for Richard Nixon to hand-pick Robert Mayhew because he had worked with him on other successful operations, including the Aristotle Onassis deal subterfuge. Additionally, Mayhew's main client, Howard Hughes, was a political backer of Nixon who had met with Nixon not long before these operations began. According to what Santo Trafficante told F. Lee Bailey's investigator, Nixon reached out to Hughes directly to solve the Castro problem, and Hughes then delegated the project to Robert Mayhew. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue our study of the relationship between the mafia and the JFK assassination by looking at the Kennedy administration's actions against the mob and what the HSCA had to say about organized crime involvement. Then we begin zooming in on mafia figures like Meyer Lansky, Jimmy Hoffa, Sam Giancana, Johnny Rosselli, Santo Trafficante, and Carlos Marcello. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com for more information.